Hi, this is John Udell. My guest for this week's podcast interview is Mike Frost, who is the CEO of Site Controls. His company is bringing Linux, Java, and a modern approach to networking to the world of energy management. One of the things that ought to be a national priority, but isn't, is the idea of the energy web, a power grid that's as intelligent, as reliable, and as adaptive as it could be and should be. There hasn't been much hopeful progress on this front, but my conversation with Mike convinced me that there are going to be entrepreneurial approaches that can work.
Hey, John, this is Mike Frost with Site Controls. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for calling, Mike. So I've just been reading up on what there is to see at sitecontrols.com.
Okay.
This is a fascinating subject to me, and when I go back and look at what I've read and written on the subject, I am again astounded at the degree to which this is not an issue on very many people's radar screens.
And it's interesting, isn't it?
Well, it's more than interesting. It's given current geopolitical circumstances, it just is unbelievable. But in any event, let's set some context here.
If you look at it from the highest macro level, you know, energy consumption in our country continues to increase dramatically, yet generation capacity does not. And even a larger tax on the grid is the ability to distribute that. There are a lot of places where congestion is just a really huge issue. So our vision long term is to be able to leverage millions of small buildings so that we're able to intelligently shed load, move load, you know, do lots of interesting things. You know, I saw two fighter jets go by. You know, you don't see that every day.
What airport are you in?
I'm in St. Louis.
Oh.
Well, those are pretty badass planes. Anyway, sorry, John. The idea is that if you try to pull power, you know, in the middle of a hot afternoon out of a bunch of residences, you know, you're cutting off people's electricity. If you're trying to pull power, you know, off of the grid in large industrial applications, I mean, you can't shut down wafer fabs. You know, you end up shutting down things like rock crushing plants and large industries, and you send people home, and it's all very expensive. It all has lots of high consequence. So the real ultimate goal for us is to be able to consolidate and aggregate the load in specific areas of all these little buildings, and there's convenience stores and their restaurants and their retail and their fitness centers and all kinds of things into something that is actually controllable via software.
So the idea is that before we get to the point where we have an intelligent energy grid or energy web in the large, we can start to see some of these network effects happening to the extent that at least your network has an interesting number of sites plugged into it that at scale enables you to actually have a kind of a macro effect.
That's exactly right. It depends on the business rules and the business value for that particular customer. You know, Petco really cares about aquariums. They care about, you know, off-hour temperatures, all kinds of things, because they have inventory that's alive all the time.
Right.
You know, Cheesecake Factory cares about a whole different set of things. They care about how cool is it inside of my walk-in, you know, what is the dishwasher temperature, is it exactly 71 degrees, I always want my guests to be comfortable. They have a completely different set of things that are important to them.
Sure.
You know, when you talk about Michael's stores, it's a completely different set of things that are important to them. So you're exactly right. Our vision here is to create an intelligent grid of our customers within the grid that actually, if you add them all up, it's about a third of what's in most areas, the demand on the grid during peak demand periods. So it's a significant amount.
Because the way I had been thinking about this was more in terms of the intelligent home, and obviously in aggregate that would be enormous, but the build out is going to be incredibly slow, obviously, because you have to reach all of those endpoints and instrument them, and you know, that's just going to take forever. So I can see where
there's a second key issue there. In a home, if you think about being able to on the fly, using just software, reduce a significant amount of load, it's going to come at high consequence, because it's going to happen when there's extreme weather, whether it's hot or cold. And it's going to be at the most extreme time. Whereas when you look inside of these, like take a Michael's store or a Party City, those things are great big, huge cubic boxes that are full of conditioned air.
Right.
Be able to go in and push set points in there you know, 5 degrees, nobody's going to notice, John. We run test after test. Matter of fact, we're running one. We're going to be doing an event today. We did one a couple of weeks ago in the entire state of Texas. We can do the same thing that you can accomplish in literally hundreds of thousands of homes, but you can do it in these retail environments with very low to no consequence. People just don't notice.
And many, many fewer points of intervention.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So,
you know, in one of these retail, you know, we can pull 20 or 30K out of a Michaels or a Party City or a Phillips 66 convenience store.
Yeah.
You're only going to get 3/4 of a kilowatt or 1 kilowatt at best out of a home.
Right.
And every one of those retail establishments is equivalent to 20 or 30 low consequence versus high consequence.
Right. Well, these are parallel initiatives, but they're on different schedules. I mean, on the home front, years ago, a guy from Intel, as a matter of fact, was visiting Byte Magazine, and he asked a question to me, which I've never forgotten, which is, why is it that your telephone bill is exquisitely itemized and your power bill is basically one number? Right? And I've been thinking about that ever since. You know, the notion that to this day, it's unclear to me what the payback is going to be for replacing a refrigerator or replacing a water heater is, you know, multiplied by millions of homes, just an enormous thing. And it's obviously gated by not just the energy web in the network, but also by the advent of appliances that are prepared to plug into that. And, you know, this also obviously applies to what you're doing. And that's one of the things I wanted to ask about is, you know, I can easily understand how you can drop a Linux and Java equipped Pentium box into a Michaels store or into a bunch of them and hook it up to the internet. But it seems like the tricky piece is getting the sensors and the actuators deployed out to the control points, right? And you're dealing with a variety of legacy and newer equipment and so on, and people aren't going to just wholesale upgrade that. So what's the story there in terms of being able to intervene with the equipment?
You know, there's two sides to that story. There is being able to build in the ability to intervene with old and new equipment on the site side. And the way, and what we chose to do there was use Java-based open system development running on Linux and essentially turn every site into a web server.
Right.
If we accomplish that, it's really easy to interface because you're just using standard open systems architecture to do that. And, you know, we run into it all the time. The other day, we were talking to a guy that owns a chain of, really large chain, of convenience stores, and his big ticket item is these little, you know, the Frosty machine when you buy the little frozen Coke product?
Mm-hmm.
90% gross margins for those guys. Whenever that's broken, they really want to know.
Yeah.
And so, sure enough, it's got a little digital I.O. We were able to figure out some of the error codes, and so we added that online, read the error codes, send a smart email to the district manager whenever that thing is broken.
Right.
Since we've already got a gateway into the site, we've already got a computer there, we've already turned it into a web server, essentially adding that one component is rather simplistic.
So on the device side of this, rather than awaiting some grandiose standards to coalesce, it's kind of like 3 yards and a cloud of dust, right? You take a given class of devices which have fairly interesting distribution in the world, and you just kind of reverse engineer how to talk to them.
Exactly. And it's the same thing whether it's a Frosty machine, a walk-in cooler, a swimming pool monitoring system. You know, anything that's got an analog or a digital I.O., you know, it's fairly manageable for us to be able to interface to it.
Yeah. And how much of this interface work is kind of greenfield, and how much of it is prior art?
50-50.
Okay.
You know, the other side of that question, you know, which I think is equally as interesting, given the conversation, is we developed the system because the business rules for every utility are different. Not only is every site different, you've got old stuff, new stuff, but, you know, every utility in every region calculates the energy bill a little bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
They're all going to be, in the future, implementing time of use, time of day pricing a little bit differently. They're all going to be issuing, you know, demand response. Are you familiar with that term?
Yeah.
They'll be issuing demand response signals and pricing signals in a different way. So it all made sense to us that, you know, we just, you know, turn it into a web server where it understands the business rules there. You can go to one place and set the business rules for all those locations, but that location needs to be able to very simplistically modify the way it interfaces with its given utility.
Right.
And if the price of power goes sky high, then it applies a different strategy to that site without a human having to intervene and push a bunch of buttons to tell it what to do.
So if I'm Petco's operations guy, I come into your system to the management console of your system through the web and have some representation of those business rules that I can tweak in a relatively non-programmer way.
That's right. And you can select that stuff by state. You can select it by city because regions have to be very, very flexible. You can aggregate that demand. If I'm the Petco guy in Nebraska, I can see every Petco in Nebraska and exactly how many KWI I'm pulling right now.
Mm-hmm.
How many KWH I've pulled today, this month, this week, whatever you want to see.
Mm-hmm.
Our architecture is really different. Since we're a bunch of computer guys from Austin as opposed to a bunch of controls guys from Michigan, I probably shouldn't say that.
Uh-huh.
Or a bunch of controls guys from wherever they come from, right? The way we design the architecture, instead of it being a one-on-one building manager that's, you know, dialing into a building and looking at an HVAC, we didn't design the architecture that way. We designed it to be persistently connected to the Internet, so it really is a web server.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are servers that are decentrally located that are constantly polling those sites. And so it goes into every one of those Petcos, and it gets the temperature of every fish tank, every fish tank every 15 minutes, and puts that in a database.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever that manager from Nebraska wants to know something about his sites in Nebraska, he's not actually logging on to them. That's incredibly inefficient. He's just going to, you know, go into like an online banking website, right? Runs a couple reports, and boom, there's the data.
Yeah, so you're staging the data off of the various devices onto your unit on the site. What amount of pre-existing networking are you leveraging there, and what amount needs to go in new?
Well, what we're doing is a combination of things. If the network is there, that makes installation much easier, and we just log on to it.
Mm-hmm.
We create our own low-voltage controls network within the site, and that's what we hang all of our sensors off of. And we're on the verge of introducing a new wireless technology based on Zigbee, where everything is going to be wireless within the site from a sensor perspective that then goes back on to the standard Internet connection.
Okay. So I have a couple of questions here. But first of all, I noticed that you guys have joined the GridWise Alliance.
Yeah.
And I went and did some reading on that, and I find that it is essentially the vision that was, or part of the vision that was outlined in that amazing Electric Power Research Institute document that I found
yep.
a couple of years ago.
Right.
Just an extraordinary piece of work. And again, you know, the fact that I don't think I've heard any politician make any reference to that thing ever is just astonishing. But in any event, a key sort of near-term priority as laid out by that EPRI document was the modernization of the grid. And the assertion is that, you know, simply by leveraging what we have now in terms of communications and computing capabilities, we could make the grid, you know, never mind all the fancy energy web stuff about demand response and kind of real-time negotiation. But if we simply made the thing as reliable as it could be, then that alone would cost justify any upgrades that need to happen, because cost of outages is so enormous, and we would essentially, you know, not be in a situation where every large IT shop feels like it has to have its own redundant power backup strategy,
right?
Which is incredibly expensive and wasteful, right? So if we could rely more on the grid. I mean, you can tell me better than I can sort this out for myself, but just poking around, you know, I found a link that said success stories at a DOE site. It says success stories. This page is under construction. Please check back soon. Which is, you know, not giving me a really warm, fuzzy feeling that there's being a whole lot of progress on this front. You know, so what's your view of that?
Well, as you know, it's complex.
Mm-hmm.
My view is this. In order for GridWise initiatives and the intelligent grid to work in most areas, it requires a lot of government subsidy, because they typically are not things that have really strong ROI.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we have chosen to address the specific small segment that we're addressing as a way to really get things started, because the ROI for the customer on our end is pretty fast.
Yeah.
In other words, if Petco can pay to build the railroad, to put all this stuff in, and it makes sense for Petco because, A, they lose less inventory,
yep.
they run their building smarter, they save energy, and they actually have a less than 24-month ROI, then they're paying the freight to build the railroad. Where in all the other segments, like residential, and we talked about them earlier, a lot of big commercial buildings, there's nobody there to build the railroad. Everybody's waiting for the government to do it.
Yep. Yeah, this is an excellent strategy. I can see exactly what you mean. It's a way to move forward without having to wait for any big clunky machinery to kick into gear, which you know may or may not happen in our lifetime.
Yeah, exactly. And then you know, if we're successful as a team, and we really hope we are, the retail, restaurant, C-store, that sort of segment of national chain brands that exist everywhere, then they really end up leading the way towards developing the GridWise initiative, the National Intelligent Grid, whatever you want to call it. Yeah. And doesn't that make sense? Because, you know, you're like me, when every city you get off a plane, you could be blindfolded. You know, you go to the first mall, you don't know where you are. Every place looks the same.
Yeah. So a related issue then is it's obviously going to be hugely to all of our benefit to have systems hooked up to the internet in this way. It also is going to magnify the vulnerability that exists in our critical infrastructure. So, you know, not a pleasant subject to discuss, but nonetheless something that needs to be addressed.
Well, you know, as a small company, you know, we're trying to be experts in energy management. We're experts in facilities management. We are, to a large extent, relying on state-of-the-art from a security perspective. I can say that we're doing what we can to work closely with Cisco. We're working with the IT departments of, and these IT groups are pretty good, you know, with these large national brands to mm-hmm. get things as secure as possible. And I know that it's very, very difficult to hack into these, you know, VPNs that are getting built behind the firewalls of national customers. It makes it kind of hard to manage it sometimes, but, you know, this stuff is firewalled up pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean things are going to happen, but knock on wood, we haven't had anything hacked into just yet.
Right. From a defense in-depth perspective, though, do you think that there are things that you could or should add?
Well, here's what we've done. We've chose to deal with that a little bit architecturally in that for most of the people that are going to interface with the system, like we used, for example, the Petco manager in Nebraska, he's got access to the data center and he can see data, but he can't really get in and change things at the site level because he's just looking at that database of information. That national energy manager based in San Diego, now he's got the higher level password, but he's behind the corporate firewall when he exercises that. There's a little bit more security there. You know, architecturally, we don't let everybody have access to stuff that can actually go in and change data, change strategies, all that. So our user base is limited, you know, far more than branch banking, right? I mean, you know, I would think the bankers are the ones with the big issues to deal with. We don't have that many users of critical data.
Yeah, I mean, let's not even go there in terms of banks. That's truly frightening. So fair enough. One of the things that strikes me here is that there's an opportunity to collaborate with the energy markets in new ways.
Oh, absolutely. There are multiple different ways. You know, there are certain places where when demand is extremely high, there's not enough distribution capacity. And so what they may need to do is reduce demand mm-hmm. in a geographic area that is really specific, but their instruments are so blunt that what they have to do is do the best they can to reduce demand on their entire service area. That's what most utilities do now. That's what Cal ISO does. That's what New England ISO does. I mean, they all do basically the same thing.
Okay.
What our vision is, and we're not shipping this product on the utility side, but where we're going is being able to produce a software product that allows them to essentially dial it down in very specific areas.
Okay.
That gives them the ability to really improve the quality of the grid, if you will. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because now in specific areas where there's a lot of congestion, you know, you can say, you know, what I would like to have happen, you know, from 2 to 4 this afternoon is I would like every restaurant, convenience store, and gas station to shed a third of their load.
Okay.
You know, we can do that. and you add all that up, I mean, it could be a significant amount of power.
And if that if a request like that flows to you, and you then have a variety of customers hanging off of your network, including the Petcos and the Michaels,
yes,
and a bunch of others, how is what's the communication between you and your customers in terms of what you're allowed to dial down and how far you can go? And
well, we talked about that that web server that's at each location. That web server has got its business rules predetermined.
Okay.
And so when that event happens, we've already thought about, you know, what do we do at level A? What do we do at level B? What do we do at level C?
Okay.
And so depending upon the word that comes down from Cal ISO, that strategy is already predetermined. Now, we'll notify customers that's happening. You know, for example, at Petco, when things get really bad and California's doing rolling brownouts, they've discovered in the past that by putting a sign at the front door that says, we're doing our best part to conserve energy today, you know, please pardon any inconvenience if it's a little bit warm and a little bit dark, because they cut the customer lights off, they go to employee lights, and they push the set points up to 78 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, they shed 30 or 40% of the load they would normally be using. But they find that from a customer awareness perspective, man, it's great PR.
Oh, it should be. Absolutely. They should be rewarded and acknowledged for doing that. And I would agree that I think that would make them look like they're on the ball.
Well, at some point, there's going to be a new level of social consciousness in these large retail brands. You already see it out of Starbucks. You know, you already see it out of Petco. But you know, we're going to start seeing that out of all of them. It's just going to become the way to behave.
Uh-huh. And probably a good role for government here, rather than, well, in addition to the much longer term solving the residential problem, would be to provide additional incentives to these guys,
right,
to do this voluntary participation, right?
No, which should help me get that going.
Is anything like that happening?
There are some.
Okay.
You know, most of they come in the flavor of just sort of standard rebates, typically how they get done. The good news is they help offset the cost of a significant amount of putting a system like ours in. They range anywhere from paying from 25 to 100% of the cost of putting something like this in.
Oh, really? Okay. And that comes from?
From NYSERDA. It comes from PGE, San Diego Gas and Electric. It comes from the utilities. Some of that's government funded, some of it's not, but it's usually the utilities where you go get that. Okay. Almost the same thing as putting a solar panels in your house.
Okay. This is very cool. So where are you in terms of the life cycle of your company, and where are you headed?
We're young. We're a three-year-old company. We like to call ourselves the fastest-growing EMS company in America.
EMS?
I'm pretty sure that's true. Yeah, energy management systems.
Okay.
We won all the big deals that we know about anyway that have come down the last year or so. You know, we're growing really, really rapidly. But we're a young technology company. We're not a controls company.
It seems like such an obvious idea, but then perhaps it's obvious to folks like me who kind of come from the computer and networking world and are accustomed to thinking about these kinds of systems in these terms. And maybe the reason that this hasn't happened to date is, you know, like you said, the people who are in the HVAC world, you know, they're not, their culture isn't to think in terms of network effects.
You know, it's interesting. I believe the new wave of applications for technology are applications like this,
mm-hmm.
where you go deep in a specific application, deep in a specific vertical, and you know, you really customize the technology. I mean, you know, we're using Zigbee, we're using 802.11, we're using Linux, we're using, you know what I mean? We're using Java, but we're specializing, and so we're bringing all the powers of the latest and greatest technology out there and going deep in a specific vertical to solve a huge problem.
Right. So part of it is network thinking, and part of it is, which is a relatively new phenomenon still, the broad availability of a range of componentry that makes it easy and economical to cobble these kinds of solutions together.
Absolutely. You know, if you look at the Honeywells and the Johnson Controls of PASS with, you know, customized solutions and sticking space boards up in air conditioners, I mean, you know, before now, they would never go into the small footprint.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys can't touch a Subway or a Starbucks, you know,
mm-hmm.
they just can't.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when you're using really low-cost, high-volume, commodity computer technology, you know, not only not only can you get it in a lower price point where you can address those markets, but you got far better technology at the end of the day anyway.
Yes. Well, this is excellent. And I think this is one of the greatest examples I've heard of in a long time of a business that is going to, in Tim O'Reilly's phrase, do well by doing good. There are not very many hopeful examples to point to in the world of energy. And it's easy to get kind of depressed about the state of affairs, but it's nice to see some really smart and encouraging action. This was really an enjoyable conversation for me.
Well, good. I appreciate it. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So thanks very much, and have a good flight, and hopefully we'll talk again.